Chapter 21. Sanguis Extremis. During the later years of the Great Crusade. Cargos. The crowd sang oh so sweetly when he broke Nerish's handsome face open to the bone. Their cheers and jeers washed over him in a physical wave, refreshing as a breeze in the bitter jungle heat. Nerish, to his credit, took two staggering steps back, at first too stubborn to realise he was done. Then reality took hold. He turned with all the grace of a gunship going down in flames and dropped to the deck, suddenly boneless. Crash went the body, and again the crowd surged.
Not so pretty anymore, eh?
Cargos grinned down at the dazed warrior with his cheek and eye socket caved in.
I think your time impressing all those remembrancer artists and poets might be done, brother.
Nerish's reply was to bring up blood instead of words. It ran down the side of the defeated warrior's face, leaking from his parted lips.
That's it, Cargos said cheerily. You stay down.
He raised his fists, his skin shining with sweat, his knuckles shining with his brother's blood. The sound of the crowd doubled, cheers and jeers alike.
Champion of the Eighth Assault!
Cargos yelled at the watching warriors, matching them bellow for bellow.
Champion of the Eighth Assault!
At his feet, Nerish started shaking, frothing at the mouth. Cargos danced back from his downed opponent as the seizure took hold.
Medic!
The call went up from the crowd.
Apothecary!
Cargos laughed, surprised and delighted by the convulsing form on the deck. He was, after all, an apothecary. He could diagnose what was wrong even without his instruments. He'd pounded a few jags of bone into the poor bastard's brain. Quite by accident, you understand. With a grin, he turned to the members of the World Eater's 11th Armoured Company at the edge of the ring, who'd just watched their champion getting his ass handed to him.
He doesn't need an apothecary. He needs a chaplain.
Theracool, centurion of the 11th Armoured, hammered his gauntlet against the detuned void shield that separated the crowd from the combatants.
Help him, you miserable bastard!
Cargos licked his iron teeth.
Help him? How? I'll tell you exactly what's wrong with your hero. He's a weakling piece of shit, just like the rest of you. Flaws like that, they can't be helped.
The officer raged, twitching with blood need and the press of the nails. He was calling for the void shield to come down, against the rules of the arena. The restraint field held for 90 seconds after every bout, time enough for a victory lap, though that wasn't the intention. It stopped wrathful spectators leaping in and getting involved if they didn't like the way a bout had gone. Cargos circled the dying warrior, counting down the seconds. Feeling the eyes of Nerish's company upon him, he adopted the most utterly false expression of sorrow ever to grace a human face.
Nerish, my friend. Oh, you look unwell. Whatever's the matter?
Half of the crowd roared with laughter, the other half in anger. But wasn't that just always the way when it came to the arena? Later, Khan was less than pleased with him. His captain came to him in the 8th Assault Company barracks, and Cargos could tell from Khan's face that it was going to be an unpleasant discussion. Dozens of warriors milled about, cleaning weapons, banging armour back into shape, or resting in states of uneasy hypnosis to counter the pain of the nails that refused to let them sleep naturally. The centurion was in his armour, but Cargos was still dressed in only the undersuit trousers he'd worn while fighting in the pit. His torso was a cartography of scarring, a map of places no reasonable human would want to go.
"You and I are going to talk," said Khan.
He felt his smile drop a notch.
"I'm not sure I like the sound of that, sir."
Khan fixed him with an unchallenging stare, not much more than a rest of his weary eyes on the apothecary's features.
"Now, Cargos."
Cargos rose and obeyed. He felt the gazes of the others as Khan led him from the communal barracks. They walked for some time through the conqueror's Spartan innards. The new shipmistress, Flag Captain Sarin, was a fiend for efficiency and discipline. Her purview didn't exactly extend to the warriors of the Legion itself, They could scarcely be driven into order even by their Primarch, not that Angron troubled himself with such mundanities. But in matters of the flagship, her word was law. The Conqueror would never be what you might call beautiful, lacking the ornate interiors of vessels in 3rd and 9th Legion colours. Everything here was cut back to clean functionality and military efficiency, and rotating teams of servitors, underlings and ratings ensured it stayed that way. Cargos had been aboard the Red Tier, Sanguinius's personal warship, half a dozen times on various missions and embassies. All the gold, all the statuary, all the ivory. Cargos couldn't see the point in any of it. Only the pride of the Emperor, which was more or less Fulgrim's museum dedicated to himself, was worse. The pretension aboard the pride was unbearable. It leaked out of every polished rivet. Khan led them to one of the buttressed balconies overlooking the Conqueror's kilometres-long spine. A city's worth of castles and defence towers battlemented the warship's back. Cargos wouldn't exactly call this view beautiful either. He wasn't entirely sure he knew what the word meant, if he was being honest with himself. But at least all of this had a purpose. Khan, in his armour, towered over the apothecary. He looked tired, but Khan always looked tired. Acting as Angron's equerry would exhaust anyone. Even so, Cargos felt a twinge of empathy as the Centurion gripped the crew rail and stared wearily out into space. Beneath the ship, the planet Serion turned in its sedate dance, patches of arable green land and clean expanses of ocean showing through the cloud cover. Anchored off the Conqueror's starboard side, the immense blade of the Red Tier hung in the void, a beam of its sister ship. Emblazoned in unnecessary gold, the sigil of the Blood Angel shone on its spinal battlements.
"You killed him," said Khan, staring into space. "I know," Cargos replied. "I was there."
Khan sighed.
"You know what I mean, fool." "I really don't. Explain it to me, sir. You small words."
"It wasn't a death bout. It wasn't Sanguis Extremis." Cargos sucked in air through his metal teeth.
"It's the arena, brother. We risk death every time we enter the shielded ring. Nerish fought and he died. Did I mean to kill him? No. All right. Does that please you? It wasn't a death bout, and I didn't mean to kill him. But do I give a shit that he's dead? Of course not. He knew the risks."
Khan shook his head. Anger flickered in his eyes, and Cargos could see him holding it back. Khan was the best of them when it came to that. The Centurion lost himself so rarely to the nails. It was one of the reasons he made an excellent equerry. Khan's self-control was legendary among his brothers. Conversely, Cargos had often wondered if it was another side of the coin. Perhaps part of why his Centurion was such a mediocre gladiator. In battle, there was no world-eater he would rather fight beside than Khan. In the pits, though, Khan was next to useless. He could never summon the right focus, never muster the necessary emotion. He treated it like a training spar, and, inevitably, lost as many bouts as he won.
"Are you angry?"
Cargos needled him.
"Why is that, sir? I must really be in trouble."
"You're an apothecary," Khan spoke through gritted teeth.
"When I'm in the pits, I'm a gladiator. We all are. A brother was dying at your feet."
Cargos snorted.
"The restraint shield was still up. I could hardly run for my Narthesium and Medicaid tools, could I? What did you want me to do? Perform life-saving surgery with my fingernails? He had skull shards in his brain. The bastard was dead, Khan. I couldn't do anything about it."
"You laughed at him."
"Because it was funny."
He mimed Nerish's death spasms, his eyes rolling back in his skull. The effect was somewhat ruined by the fact he couldn't stop smiling as he did it.
"What do you want me to do? Sing a funeral dirge?"
Khan's lip twitched. His hands gripping the railing growled with compressing knuckle servos. Kargos stopped smiling then.
You really are angry, aren't you? How perceptive of you. I don't care that Neresh died, you erratic idiot. I care about what comes next. What you've provoked.
Kargos was none the wiser.
A challenge, I expect. Sanguis extremis, probably. I'll have to kill Ferrakul. That'll be the end of it.
Khan massaged his temples.
Does it never occur to you that your childish spite might have wider consequences?
He drew a token from a belt pouch. A disc of red metal, crudely engraved with name glyphs. A challenge disc. Kargos couldn't see the symbols hidden by Khan's tense grip, but he didn't need to. He knew what the names would be. The apothecary had expected no less. Tokens of grey metal were for pit fights to first or third blood. Red meant a death bout. He felt a shiver of excitement run through him at the sight of the disc. The nails bit gently in response, a tingling gnaw.
"You don't think I can take Ferrakul?"
he asked Khan.
"He'll die twice as fast as Neresh did. The 11th Armoured doesn't have anyone who can take me."
Khan tossed him the challenge disc. Kargos caught it. There were names etched onto both sides. On one side, Ferrakul Shen, Kargos Maran. On the other, Jegreth Halas, and...
"Ah,"
said Kargos.
"Yes," Khan agreed. "Exactly." He gestured into the void, where the Blood Angel's flagship hung in high orbit. "I've arranged for an intra-fleet shuttle. You can go over there and tell him yourself."
3 hours later, Kargos was aboard the Red Tier, doing just that.
"I may have made a slight tactical misjudgment," he said to his chain brother.
Nasir Amit raised an eyebrow.
"I do not think I've ever heard you say those words before."
He spoke in the tone of someone who was, at this juncture, receptive to something interesting coming along. When Kargos had first found him, Amit had been sitting alone in his arming chamber, using hand tools to scrape service grime from the joints of his red warplate. The compliance taking place on the surface had been tediously bloodless so far, and promised to stay that way. Standing for hours on parade duty had worn Amit down, and the meeting with several remembrances after it had bored him almost to tears. He'd half-slept through both events, shutting down portions of his mind, running on surface senses while his deeper thoughts slumbered. Another gift of the Space Marine mind. Still, it had been several days of pomp, ceremony, and intolerable posing for paintings by this point. Amit was bored. Kargos could tell. The World Eater relayed the events of his last arena duel, with only a little embellishment, and Amit listened without sign of judgment. He was a veteran of the Conqueror's Pits himself. He knew the risks as well as anyone.
"I fail to see the source of Centurion Khan's anger,"
the Blood Angel said, once the World Eater had concluded with Neresh's ignoble death.
"If Ferrakul wants to face you, Sanguis Extremis, then let it be so. Those are your laws, as I understand them." "You understand right. But the challenge came, and now there's the risk of a diplomatic incident."
Kargos flashed him the challenge disc. Amit tilted his head as he regarded the token. Understanding dawned in his pale eyes, and with it amusement. His own name was scratched next to Kargos.
"He wants a chain fight," said Amit. "He can't take me alone."
The World Eater was grinning.
"But his chain brother is Jegreth from 32nd Company. And Jeg is a dangerous bastard."
Amit would need to speak with his Primarch. Sanguinius had never refused those of his sons that wished to fight in the Conqueror's Pits. Amit had been dueling in the arena for almost a decade, and chain-bonded to Kargos for the last 3 of those years. Whenever their fleets intersected on campaign or while rearming and resupplying, Amit and Kargos bound their wrists together with blood-blessed iron and entered the arena side by side. The ninth Primarch's only request, phrased as a hope, not a mandate, was that his blood angels wouldn't participate in death bouts. It was base and crass, he believed, to butcher a Legion cousin for sport, and a waste to be butchered by one in kind. The days of the Revenants were far behind. The Blood Angels worked to exalt their spirits in order to resist the base urges of the flesh. In this, their Primarch was their living example. Amit refusing hadn't even crossed the World Eater's mind. The two of them had fought alongside one another in three campaigns now, and fought chained in 106 bouts in the pit. Kargos only had one question. It was why he was here.
What would the angels say about this?
Amit thought about that for a moment.
It depends on whether or not we're the ones who die.
The Conqueror had 30 fighting pits, ranging from Arena 17, a converted storage suite that stank of wet corrosion, to the apex of shipboard facilities, Arena 5, a multi-layered arrangement of traps and platforms that had once been a live-fire training hall. Kargos was familiar with the virtues and shortcomings of each arena. He'd fought in them year after year, accruing memories of victories in each one, as well as the occasional defeat. Arena 30 was the newest, and by far the grandest. It had been Captain Sarin's idea, soon after her assignment to the Conqueror. When she'd learned the World Eaters were preparing to demolish a fighter bay for the novelty of turning it into yet another fighting pit, she'd offered an alternative. Midway along the ship's belly battlements was a reinforced observation dome, originally constructed to be a rare location of luxury aboard Gloriana-class battleships. On the Conqueror's sister ship, the Fidelitas Lex, it was Primarch Lorgar's personal observation chamber, where he was said to sit in meditative repose and gaze into the tides of the warp while the ship was in transit. On the Conqueror, it was used by visiting dignitaries with the political clout to parasite their way aboard serving warships, the occasional diplomat from compliant worlds, and ambassadors from Terra sent to monitor the Legion's progress in these later years of the Great Crusade. Lotara had ordered the habitation facilities demolished, and any lingering ambassadors evicted to more austere chambers. With that done, she'd turned over the grand space for use in the Legion's gladiatorial games. This solved two problems with one solution. Everyone was happy. Well, everyone who mattered. Kargos had been with Khan and Skane on the bridge when Captain Sarin was approached with a formal petition of protest by the evicted Terran dignitaries. She listened as she lounged in her command throne, and then, in a tone of amazement that they'd bothered to bring this issue before her, she told the leader of the ambassadors that he could shove his petition up his arse and dance a merry jig. If he did this, she swore on her very life that she'd reverse her decision. He hadn't taken her up on the offer. His awkward refusal had been a source of some disappointment to Kargos and the others of the Eighth Company present at the time, as the sight would have been something to behold. Not long after this incident, Terra's visiting adepts and various other pen pushers started staying aboard other vessels in the fleet. Kargos had been hoping for Arena 5, with the newly installed spike traps making things interesting during a bout, but he couldn't deny there was a certain grandeur to fighting in Arena 30. He could hear the crowd out there, that lively susurration, while he readied himself in the shadows of the eastern antechamber. Ah, but he loved that sound. Even muffled like this, resonating through the ship's iron bones. Amit came to his side. The low light reflected from the blade of his gutting sword. They were both dressed only in trousers, but Amit was cold and focused, staring at the sealed iron bars ahead, while Kargos was twitchy with blood need. The nails were singing with the same sound as the crowd, hissing right into the core of his mind with the same white noise of anticipation.
"Blood for the Emperor,"
Cargos murmured.
Skulls for the Terran throne!
Amit licked his incisors, still staring at the barred door.
I must admit, when we met in the Orisian compliance, I never saw this coming.
Cargos glanced at his chain brother, and at the length of linked iron that bound them together at the wrists. They had 3 meters of chain between them, if stretched taut. His left arm was chained to Amit's right, not that it mattered. Most Astartes were ambidextrous. They both carried their serrated gladii in their unbound fists.
I'm glad you're here, Cargos said.
His voice was pitched low, though not through shyness or any sense of unease. If you couldn't be open with your chain brother, you couldn't be open with anyone. He spoke low only because he was struggling to form words. The nails were starting to spike. Blood ran from his nose. He could feel it in a warm trickle creeping towards his upper lip. Amit's reply was a cold smile, a fanged slice in the angelic mask of his face. They listened to the rules of the bout being called out over the chamber's vox speakers. Instead of hushing the crowd, the announcements had the opposite effect. The World Eaters, waiting for the fight to begin, started baying and cheering thrice as loud.
"The challengers demanding Sanguis Extremis!" called the announcer.
But Cargos was already losing it, losing the threads of his thought, starting to pace like a caged animal. The words out there reached him in here only in fragments of meaning. He heard the pit names of Ferrucul and Jegreth, heard their grievances against him, and knew they'd be in the western antechamber, held back by a similar barred doorway, probably shaky with their own blood need and feeling the bite of their own nails. He rammed his forehead against the door, letting the pain quiet the nails for a moment, enjoying the stinging kiss of the cold metal against his skin. There was a metallic whine at the edge of his hearing, annoying, like tinnitus.
"You're grinding your teeth," Amit said.
Cargos forced his jaws apart. The metal whining stopped.
"Blood spitter!" the announcer called. "And the flesh tearer!"
More cheering. Another stab of the nails. Now the metallic whining was back. Cargos jerked at the sudden fall of Amit's hand on his bare shoulder. They'd fought together too many times for the Blood Angel to give him any speech about restraint, but all the same, Amit's pale gaze held Cargos's flickering eyes.
Ready?
They clashed their chained wrists together as the door to their preparation cell rattled upward. Sound poured in, and they poured out. The two warriors moved into the arena as one. For the rest of his life, Amit recalled every swing of a blade, every impact of knuckles against skin, every breath and every curse that took place between the four fighters. For Cargos, as was so often the case, the details of that night were a jarring succession of moments, each one bleached red and out of order with the others, each one a flash of discrete sensation. Some of them, he knew, were memories. Some of them, he was sure, were pieced-together impressions pretending to be memories. He wasn't sure there was enough of a difference between the two states to really matter. Their primarchs were there. He couldn't forget that. As he and Amit walked out onto the killing floor of Arena 30, he almost trailed off mid-roar at the sight of Angron and Sanguinius, side by side in the elevated crowd stands. They towered over their men, staring down at the arena floor. Angron displayed his usual twitchy indifference, drawn not by the names of those fighting, but by the fact there would soon be the scent of blood in the air. When he came to the arena, it was to judge the fighting spirit of his men, never to lend support to one fighter over another. His armoured chest rose and fell with his slow breathing, and he gave a faint nod of approval at Cargos's crowd-baiting theatrics. The angel, resplendent in gold, watched with an unreadable expression. His features were carefully blank, and to see no living emotion on his perfect face was a contrast that made him seem monstrous. Captain Sarin was in attendance as well, standing before both Primarchs, as was her right as flagship captain. She turned to say something over her shoulder to Angron. The Primarch's mashed slit of a mouth curled in a brief, nasty smile. None of Amit's legion were present, only the Primarch. The rest of the stands were filled with World Eaters and the Conqueror's human crew, variously applauding, cheering, chanting. Despite the chill of Sanguinius's unnatural stillness, Cargos gloried in the walls of sound pressing upon him from all sides. Above them the stars stretched out in a view that had reduced men and women to breathless awe, and which Cargos paid no attention to whatsoever. They approached the centre of the iron deck, where Ferakul and Jegreth waited. Amit greeted them with a salute, fist against his heart. Cargos finally turned from saluting the crowd with his raised blade, greeting his two shirtless opponents with a curt nod. Tradition demanded they salute one another. Ferakul and Jegreth did so. Cargos tossed his gladius up in a rising and falling arc that caught the arena's harsh lighting in spinning flashes before it slapped neatly back into his palm. The crowd laughed or jeered to their tastes for Cargos's gesturing. Then he saluted, still smiling. He felt good. Heated and flinchy with blood need, but good. Ready to get this done. The four of them turned to the Primarchs, raising their weapons and voices in salute, a quartet of unified oath-swearing. "We who are about to die, salute you!" Angron banged his fist against his breastplate in reply. Sanguinius did the same, slower, quieter, expressionless, still. As the crowd surged, Lotara raised a hand, signalling for the first bell. The four combatants faced each other. Ferakul looked haunted by nails pain, his skin sallow, his nose dripping blood. Jegreth, taller, bulkier, was more in control. His breathing was laboured like Cargos's, but his eyes were clear. Cargos stepped forward, exhaling with dull-eyed hunger. Amit pulled him back at the last moment, preventing a breach of decorum.
"Second bell," the Blood Angel warned. "Hold!"
Cargos grunted in acknowledgement, stepping back into line. Jegreth smiled at Bloodspitter's slip.
"Sorry you have to die today, Nasir." "Tonight, Jeg," Cargos interjected. "When your headless body lies cold in the Apothecarian, I'll be in my chambers skinning and sanding down your skull to a smooth sheen. Not as a trophy, you understand. It's my intention, brother, to give it to Captain Sarin as a decorative pot for her to piss in."
Jegreth shook his head, his lip curling.
"It'll be a pleasure to carve you up, Cargos."
Amit's voice was the lowest, softest of all four.
"Don't tell us. Show us."
The second bell rang, and with its chime, Cargos's memories descended into red. This is what he remembered. The feel of a serrated blade grinding against bone. The sound of it muffled by meat inside the flesh of a man's body. The rattle of chains, the slashing whip-crack of loose iron pulled tight, leashed around a sweating throat, the slow, delicious crackle of abused vertebrae, only crackling at first, then a strained clicking, then that dry branch snapping as the intervertebral discs start to give. A little more, a little more. Paralysis awaits, so close, the ultimate infliction upon a struggling foe. The snaps become crunches. The spine begins to crack. Music. It's music. The sharp whack of skull on skull. The punishing intimacy of a headbutt. Front bone thudding into the softer ethmoid bone of the sinuses and the prime target of the nasal cavity. Pounding cartilage. Breaking blood vessels. Disrupting blood flow in the face. Vision and scent both flaring with flaws. The activation of the tear ducts and the running of cranial blood from ruptured vessels. Distractions. Irritations. Ultimately ignorable. "Sword!" his brother calls. "Sword!" He disarms himself, throwing his blade to Amit. The Blood Angel, beautiful where he is a creature of scars and cranial surgery, spins and cuts with two blades now. Amit dances as he fights. Both blades drive into flesh, birthing a roar that becomes a cry that becomes a grunt. Meat is carved open. Blood runs. heat. The stink of another man's breath, the stench of his last meal flavoured by fear and stomach acid, the plunging pressure of teeth, 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 the gush of wet life, red and thick and copperishly foul. Swallowing another man's blood, drinking his life down, bearing the sick taste, just to see the horror in his eyes as he sees what his enemy is doing. That's his blood, he knows. That's his flesh, his body between another man's teeth. He is being eaten alive. The crunching snap of an elbow to the zygomatic bones of the face. A princely blow, shattering the cheekbone and eye socket. An eyeball hangs, mulched to worthlessness. Laughter is the backbeat, then laughter and cheering. The sound of the crowd, no longer individual beings, but a gestalt, a single god that feeds on blood and sweat and wasted life. It cares not from whence the blood comes, only that it flows in abundance. And it flows. It runs. It sprays. Not jetting with the hyperbole of poor poetry, ripe with symbolism, but the altogether more mundane arc of blood spurting from cleaved arteries. The thick smell of it in the air, the scalding kiss of it on the skin of his face. Though it cools fast, in that first split second it's always a splash of boiling water. Darkness and light, alternating, one and then the other, over and over. The thunder of a skull hammering into the metal deck, stressing the fractures of already breached bone. Crying out, not for mercy, but for a brother's aid, because as his skull is ground into the iron, a blade lays open his back with clumsy chops and carvings. The unreal sensation of fingers curling with hate, reaching into the body, clawing at the spine itself, the knowledge of disassembly. The heat of blood need stealing all words somewhere between the brain and the tongue. Angry words becoming snarls and bestial breathing punctuated by ropes of slaver. Hating so fiercely it breaks the ability to speak. Tonguing the roof of the mouth, forcing the saliva glands to gush, milking one's own mouth to pull forth the flow of poison, spitting it, missing, hearing the gobbet of saliva hissing on the deck, trying again, closer this time, not spitting, but opening the jaws wide, letting it trickle, letting it flow over the teeth, drooling acid into the man's quivering, desperate eyes, licking the eyeball to seal the deal and steal his sight, lathering the window of his soul with corrosive venom. Side by side with his brother again, wrapping their shared chain around a single throat and pulling, pulling! Flailing hands grip weakly and slap uselessly against sweating, bleeding bodies. A mouth opens, becomes a maw, but bites nothing and draws in no air. No bones crackle and snap and crunch this time. This time they make it last. This time he will die, and it will be the criminal's death, the bloodless death, extinction by strangulation. The thud of dead meat onto the arena deck. The animal roar of the god crowd. The looks in the eyes of the lords of two legions. One distantly approving, the other mournfully accepting. One seeing a victory, one seeing failure. The picking up with trembling fingers of a fallen sword. The soaring of a fight-dulled blade through unresisting flesh. The raising of a severed head, still dripping blood and marrow. The stink of it, which is utterly familiar but never quite pleasant. The honour of fighting at the side of a man he can trust above any other. The gratitude, the fraternal love in weary and bloodshot eyes after enduring something so few souls ever go through together. The lifting of two fists, his own and his brother's, their wrists still bound by a length of blood-stained chain. Thralls bathed them in the aftermath. Apothecaries sealed their wounds. Cargos was still riven by nails heat, trembling, sweating. Amit was calm, practically placid, licking his incisors in contemplation. That was always the difference between them after a bout. The Blood Angel's rage faded fast. The World Eaters took forever to swallow. They sat opposite each other in the ward chamber, where the wounded of the evening's previous fights were likewise being stitched up, and the dead were harvested for their gene seed. Amit was a statue as his thralls sponged and cleansed his lesser injuries. He barely flinched as the apothecaries did the deeper work with their wet scarlet tools. Cargos had none of his serenity. His scarred lips kept twitching into a self-satisfied sneer, partly from the nails triggering muscle memory, partly from the sight of Jegrith and Ferricule's bodies on nearby slabs. There they lay, chopped up, cut open. It wouldn't take much effort at all to widen the wounds for gene seed extraction. Around them, the grunts and grumbles quieted down, and the bone saws ceased their whining. All eyes turned to the figures entering from the main concourse, two towering icons flanked by their respective sons. All eyes, that is, except Cargos's. He kept watching Amit. He'd known Amit back in the days of the Revenant Legion. Not as well as he knew his chain brother now, but the Revenants and the Warhounds had fought together in several campaigns, forced into collusion by the dismissive grind of Imperial bureaucracy. He'd seen the other man with his lips reddened by gory rituals. He'd seen Amit fighting the way the Revenants fought back then, motivated by a brutality so absolute it held no place for considerations of morality. They achieved victory. They ate the flesh of the dead in their rites of remembrance, and they moved on. No banners raised in glory, no triumphs held in their honour. And back then, both legions bore reputations that were, at best, stained by their demeanour in war. Both legions found themselves assigned to some of the Great Crusade's bitterest conflicts, doing their bloody work out of sight and out of mind. But year by year, the Legiones Astartes had rediscovered their primarchs. Changes whipped through each legion in the wake of finding its founding father. The Warhounds became the World Eaters, and they broke their central nervous systems in emulation of their wounded overlord. They beat the butcher's nails into their skulls, scarring their minds. No longer ashamed of their blood-soaked past, but exulting in it, pissing away their capacity to feel pleasure outside of battle. The World Eaters were a finer weapon than the Warhounds ever were, if the only measure of success was the number of corpses in their wake. They stopped at nothing, shied away from no massacre, cared nothing for guilt or innocence, only the purity of compliance. And that was Cargos now, sat opposite his chain brother, twitching with electrical signals worming through his nervous system. A parasite machine squatted in his skull, biting into the meat of his mind. He looked at Amit, watching the way his comrade mastered his rage behind that angelic facade. The Revenant Legion hadn't followed customs of barbaric surgeries and adrenal resculpting. They'd been gore crows and carrion feeders first, but their Primarch had inspired them to restraint. Sanguinius had promised them that if they mastered their darkest desires, they would be all the stronger for it. The changes came thick and fast then. The legions kept echoes of their fraternal unity, but they drifted to different paths. The Blood Angels were no longer assigned to belligerent shitholes on the galactic map. They were given campaigns where they drenched themselves in glory. They were bestowed with accolade after accolade, while the World Eaters amassed censure after censure, more than they ever had before the Butcher's Nails changed their fate. Looking at Amit, he could no longer see the angelic ghoul that he'd first met all those decades before. In its place was this meditative creature, capable of absolute violence one moment, possessed of saintly calm the next. In moments like these, Cargos hated him. The nails bit hard at the thought, spiking his blood with narcotic delight. He felt his fingers curl, imagining Amit's throat within his grip.
"Here we go," Amit said, drawing Cargos back to the present.
The World Eater turned as the two Primarchs drew near. He looked up into their faces. Angron was as twitchy as Cargos himself, while Sanguinius's beatific features were set and resolved. The two brothers couldn't look less alike for children rendered from the same genetic template. Any similarities in bone structure and facial feature were overshadowed by disparities in posture, in scarring, in expression, in bearing. In every way but the basest physicality, they were utterly unalike. Behind the two brothers stood Khan and Raldoron, first captain of the Blood Angels. Khan looked implacable, but when did he not? Noble Raldoron was choosing not to hide his expression of mild disgust, and Kargos suspected that said a great deal about why the Primarchs had come.
"You did well," said Angron,
and as ever his voice was something between a wheeze and a growl. Talking pained him. Thinking pained him. All his legion knew it, for they felt lesser echoes of it themselves. Kargos saluted him, fist against his heart, and couldn't help but notice the trickle of silvery spittle at the corner of his father's mouth. He wiped the back of his hand across his own lips reflexively. Sanguinius didn't commend Amit. The angel, his wings furled tight to his body, seemed careful not to touch anything or anyone in the chamber. The only contact he made was with his own son, when he closed his golden gauntleted fingers on Amit's chin, the gesture one of surpassing gentleness. Amit was already looking up at his Primarch father. Sanguinius's touch denied him the chance to look away.
"You disappoint me, Nasir."
Amit nodded in his sire's delicate grip. He made no excuses, didn't play for forgiveness.
"I know, Lord."
"You are an intelligent soul," Sanguinius said softly. "So you know what I am going to ask of you. I will not force this upon you, and if you do it, it will not redeem your performance in this wasteful display. But I want you to remember this moment, Nasir. I want you to go forward with this night imprinted upon you. Would you do that for me?"
"Yes, Lord."
The angel released the hold on his blood-stained son and said,
"Thank you."
Amit's pale eyes flicked to Angron, then back to his father. From the impassive expression written on that scar-tissue visage, Angron had already granted his permission for what was about to take place. To Kargos, the exchange between Sanguinius and Amit sent uneasy prickles along his skin. If one of Angron's legion disappointed their Primarch, that warrior tended to die. None of this gentle, disapproving acceptance. Amit rose from the slab with a last glance to Kargos. It was a look that conveyed nothing clearly enough for certainty. Kargos wasn't sure if there were flecks of apology in that momentary contact or not. The world-eater watched as his chain brother took a surgical blade from one of the watching human medics. As Amit walked over to where Ferrokul lay, the wardroom's harsh lighting flashed off the bone saw in his hand. In the end, it wasn't much of a thing. No chanting, no prayers. Like so many elements of Legiones Astartes' life, it was an act of human horror reduced to workhouse mundanity. Bone was carved and cracked open. Slivers of grey meat were sliced free and devoured. Blood and fluid marked an unhungry mouth that chewed and swallowed with easy stoicism. Amit didn't empty the dead man's brain pan. He ate sparingly, pointedly, to absorb memory and sensation, not to saturate himself with Ferrokul's entire existence. Kargos watched his chain brother perform the Revenant's old ritual of remembrance, wondering at the taste of Astarte's brain flesh. He'd eaten the minds of slain Xenos and countless humans to learn the secrets of their cultures and their armies, but the idea of consuming another legionary's brain matter made his skin crawl. There was something quietly perverse about that. He didn't want Ferrokul's memories in the back of his head. The ache of the nails was enough of a distraction. Although it could be pleasant to experience the dead fool's final moments in such a way. That might make for a fine and visceral retelling of the tale. Kargos's scabbed lips parted in a smile. A golden hand rested on his shoulder, gently holding him back.
Cargos hadn't even realized he'd started forward. He turned his head, looking from Amit's silent cannibalism and up into the pale eyes of Lord Sanguinius. "No," said the angel. Either he'd read the World Eater's mind, or inferred enough of the truth from that single step forward. To Cargos's recollection, this was the one and only time in his life he'd met the angel's eyes. When it was done, paltry little ritual that it was, Cargos and Amit said their farewells. Amit offered no insight as to the sensation of devouring their opponent's memories, and Cargos didn't ask. They shook hands, gripping wrist to wrist, and embraced. It was always a strange sensation, for one who lived his life in armour, to be skin to skin with another being. But they were brothers, and the embrace was fierce and sincere.
"Thank you," Cargos told him. "Thank you, brother."
Amit wasn't much of a smiler, but there was warmth in his gaze, in those pale eyes so like his father's.
"Until next time."
They broke the embrace and parted ways. Their legion fleets parted ways the next day.